Richard Cott comes to us from England. He is an expert in techniques for maintaining privacy in your personal affairs and your communications. He's the publisher of a private newsletter published by Quaestor Press called The Q, and it covers topics including personal privacy, investing, and monetary exchange on a global basis. And now Richard Cott.
Welcome to this introductory on privacy. I hope to give you a solid grounding in some of the most useful tips and practical steps that you can take to ensure your life is as private as you want it to be. But why should you be thinking about privacy at all? Why is it so important? Well, the fact is that governments have been introducing increasingly intrusive legislation to remove our rights to privacy. This, in turn, removes our ability to be free. America is perhaps most famous for its war on financial and personal privacy, with the increase in measures to prohibit transactions above a certain amount, with the extraordinary sums of money being spent on monitoring all forms of communication, and with the world's largest databases that are maintained purely to be able to trap citizens into giving the government more money. But America is not alone in its war on privacy. Far from it. Often, methods that are tried out in Australia are then adopted by the US before spreading through Europe and beyond. Asset forfeiture is a prime example of this. It's important that you make a judgment as to how private you really wish to be, and how many steps you're willing to take to keep it that way. This will depend on your particular circumstances, on what your aims are and how you want to achieve them. But bear in mind this thought. Make sure that whatever you decide to do, whatever methods you implement, never feel as though you're the victim. This is crucial to all aspects of security and privacy. Governments are going to increasing extremes to attack privacy. But how much of a threat does that pose to you? Are you really likely to be a target? My answer to that is, ensure you don't become a victim. It's important to find out about the methods being used to attack privacy and the methods you can employ to keep hold of your privacy. If you know the strength of a threat, you can gauge how strong the methods you employ need to be. But this is only going to help you if you do so with a clear and balanced mind. Too many people live in the palm of politicians and bureaucrats who are more interested in filling their pre-election coffers than they are in serving those who elect them. Too many people accept the stories that they read in the papers or hear on the news bulletins. The spin doctors would like to keep it this way. They want you to accept their version of events because they want you to keep paying them money, but they're not interested in giving you freedom. The fact is that your privacy is being steadily and subtly eaten away. And for the most part, it is the government that's doing it. It may sound melodramatic, but nobody except you wants you to have the privilege of being a private citizen anymore. Your government certainly doesn't. For them, privacy is anathema. It means they cannot control you. And in today's world, government stands for control over, not representation of, its citizens. They will go to alarming lengths to attack your privacy, so you need to take great pains to make sure you find ways to beat them, ways that are legal and lasting. I will outline some of the most effective methods you can use. I'll give you specific, concrete steps that you can take immediately to help to increase your day-to-day privacy. One of the first things to remember if you want any form of privacy is that you should keep your secrets to yourself. And that means just exactly what it says. If you have money in an offshore account, if you've set up a structure to enhance the profit retained from your business, or if you're going to be going somewhere that you don't want anyone else to hear about, then don't tell anyone. With this in mind, let's begin to take a look at the steps you can take to regain control. Step one is to open up at least one mail drop. If it looks as though you are receiving mail from a destination that is deemed to be of interest, then you'll find yourself targeted. The solution is, don't receive any of this sort of mail. Use a mail drop. Pay to have the correspondence you really want kept secret sent somewhere else. You can then either have it forwarded on, or you can arrange for the mail to be collected. The first option is more convenient, but more expensive. It also means that you're only putting one break between yourself and discovery. The second option is cheaper and more secure, but only as long as you have a trusted mail drop provider. Even then, You run the risk of being filmed collecting your mail, so one option might be to have someone else collect it for you and then post it on either to your own address or to a second mail drop from where it will be forwarded on to you. Whatever you decide, open the mail drop in a different city, a different state or county from the one that you live and do business in. You won't be using these for everyday correspondence. It would look strange if you suddenly receive no mail at all apart from the gas and electricity bill. What you have to weigh up is the value of what you want to keep private. And in my experience, it has to be worth spending a few $100 on safeguarding the privacy of your mail. Especially if you're looking at saving yourself thousands or hundreds of thousands in the long run. Step number 2 is to secure your telephone calls. If you've not heard about Echelon, you need to know about it. Echelon is the system whereby each and every telephone call, fax, and email is stored in a vast computer in the USA. Those of you who've seen the film Enemy of the State will know something about this. Believe me, the film is no exaggeration. The technology being used to make sure every call, fax, and email is recorded is extraordinary. But what do they do with it? If you use certain keywords, words that are on a government hot list, then a file will be set up especially for you. Keywords include offshore, passport, banking, anonymous, encryption, government, taxes, and so on. They also include the names of world leaders and the names of places where they live. Use any of these, and you will have a file already being compiled on you, just in case they can use the information at some future stage. It's easy for the government to listen into your conversations. In 1998, the US Congress set aside $500 million to develop a system that would enable the FBI and the other agencies to listen in on 50,000 plus calls at the same time. For any truly sensitive conversations, use a payphone that is not close to where you live. And use coins or a prepaid card. A lot of call boxes are now filmed as a matter of course, so don't use the same box every time. Step number 3 is to remove the ID display from your fax machine. All communications by fax are subject to be intercepted, and fax messages can easily be reproduced by nosy agency officials. Remove the station identifier number and the identifying telephone number from your fax. This way, the source of your fax transmission is not automatically known. You can at least choose whether or not to identify yourself on your messages. You can get some very good fax encryption systems now as well. Paperdisk is a new one that sends your faxes as indeterminate patterns on a page. As long as the recipient also has Paperdisk, you can encrypt and then they can decrypt all your messages. This particular program allows you to shrink messages to the order of 900 to 1. You can send 900 pages of A4 on only one sheet. Step 4 is to get a good laptop computer. With a modem, you can plug your mobile phone into this computer and send coded faxes or emails anywhere in the world. Don't have any of the information that is on your usual computer stored on your laptop. Remember what I said earlier. Put in as many breaks as possible. Another piece of advice is to encrypt all your electronic mail. Encryption is merely a way of putting an envelope around your email so that people cannot read it. Most people might not be aware that as they browse through the internet, their every move can be traced and observed. Most people probably don't know that the email messages they send can be intercepted, read, and then forwarded on without the sender or the recipient knowing anything about it. Step number 5 is to use prearranged codes. If you want to be even more private, you should develop some simple form of code which is decipherable only by you and the person you're contacting. There are plenty of ways of doing this, but the simplest is what I call the one-time code. This is very straightforward, but very hard for any third party to crack. First, you just go to a bookshop and buy 2 identical books with cash. Make sure they're the same editions. It doesn't matter which book it is, but they must be exactly the same. You keep one, and you give the other one to a person with whom you're going to communicate. Don't make the mistake of sending it in the mail with a note. When you meet with your friend, develop a simple sequence of numbers and letters that allows you to look on a particular page, at a particular column, and then for a particular word when you correspond. When you send your message, you can use a mixture of words and numbers if you prefer, the alphanumeric version, or you can use only numbers. When the recipient gets the message, he decodes it using his book and can answer you in the same way. For each person that you use a one-time code with, I suggest you use a different set of books, even if you use the same code, so that no two correspondents ever have the same one-time code. Step number 6 is to buy a shredder, because going through your trash is the easiest way for someone to find out many things about you. A recent court case found that it was not unlawful to remove someone's garbage, as long as it's returned at a later stage. Lawyers and private detectives now use this method to try to pick up any information on you that might be difficult to find anywhere else. So, don't put anything in the dustbin that you don't want anyone to see. And that means holiday tickets, invoices, and other apparently mundane pieces of paper, as well as more obvious documents. For entire secrecy, shred and then burn everything. Step number 7 is to obtain a safety deposit box. I would always advise people to open at least one safety deposit box. This is a space that is reserved for you inside a vault or a highly protected building. If you have documents that you want to keep in another country rather than bringing home, opening up a safety deposit box is almost essential. It may mean that you have to take an extra trip on a bus or a cab to go and collect the contents, but this can be a real bonus if used well. If possible, don't open the box in your own name. Use an alternative ID or use the name of a company. Use the box only for documents that you really cannot afford to shred. Many offshore banks and private companies are more than willing to provide safety deposit boxes. Step number 8. Install at least 2 safes. I would put in 2 in different rooms and different locations. Don't let the company that you buy your safe from install it as well. Pay for it in cash and insist that you'll get the delivery and installation sorted out yourself. The last thing you want is to be entered on a database somewhere that lists all the people who have bought domestic safes in the last 10 years. When you do install the safes, put one in an obvious place and one that is unusual. Create a false paper trail for someone to follow. For instance, if you have an offshore bank account in the Caribbean, put some brochures or easily decodable messages about European banks into your first safe. It never does any harm to send the snooper off on a wild goose chase. Put the second safe somewhere harder to access. In the floor under a carpet or under a chest of drawers. Maybe not in the house at all. Make sure nobody but you knows about this safe. Step 9 is to use cash whenever you can. Remember, always keep your cash transactions below the reporting requirements in your country of residence. If cash isn't an option for some reason, go to a post office or a convenience store and buy a money order. A money order is always better than a personal check or your credit card. Remember, all bank transactions are kept on record and all credit card transactions are maintained on computer for at least 6 years. Cash leaves behind no record, and this is important if you don't want to leave an easy-to-build picture of yourself through your spending habits. With credit card and bank records, Big Brother can unravel your life. He can find out where you shop, what you buy, which restaurants you eat at, which hotels you frequent, and with whom. He can find out to whom you owe money, the amount of your payments to creditors, whether or not you support a religious group, a political group, etc. If there's anything that gives the tax authorities reason to believe that the lifestyle you're leading cannot be sustained by the income that you're declaring, then you'd better watch out. The most important thing to remember is that what the government can't know about your private affairs won't hurt you. Step number 10 leads on from this. Step number 10 is to avoid credit cards altogether. Credit cards leave a paper trail that lead right up to your front door. So pay off old balances if you can and close accounts that you don't use much. Step 11 is to remove your name from databases. I can't stress the importance of this enough. This is an absolute must for anyone wishing to preserve any privacy at all. Why? Because most direct mail companies you purchase a product from then rent out your name to other direct mail firms. They make a lot of money doing this. And you don't know who will be renting the list next. And this includes subscribing to privacy publications or buying privacy-related products. My advice would always be to do so under a different name. giving your mail drop as the address for everything to be sent to. That way, if you're worried about your name escaping into unwelcome hands, you can always have a specific mail drop just for the purpose of receiving privacy information. And you can close it at any time. Step 12 is to protect your signature. Try never to sign for things that are then taken away, like the courier package delivered to your doorstep or your office. They don't actually need your real signature, so don't give it to them. The signature facsimile is downloaded into most courier companies' mainframe and is therefore available to senders and receivers on request. Signature databases have now come online, and you cannot know how secure your signature will be. If you're happy using several signatures, that's fine, as long as you can remember which one is which. My personal preference would be probably just to mark an X. That's pretty useless to anyone. Step 13. Obtain some alternative ID for yourself and perhaps for your family as well. If this sounds illegal, it isn't. There's nothing wrong with having an alias. It's only illegal if you attempt to defraud someone through the use of your alias. For example, you can order any number of different documents through the post from companies offering a wide range of products. You send the company your passport photos, together with a name and address and sometimes other bits of information like date of birth. They then send you a small laminated card that identifies you as being someone else, with another job and a different address. You can easily slip this into a wallet, and then you can build up an alternative character by ordering other forms of identification until you have completed an alter ego. Step 14 is to avoid giving your social security number or national insurance number to anyone. You should never give these numbers out to anybody unless you're required by law to do so. If it's legal to do so, always give a different number out, or operate with your alternative ID as described earlier. Be aware that many institutions, especially banks, are now utilizing a social security verification software program, which is available to them free on the internet. The more you give out your real number, the higher profile you become. And the name of this game is being as unnoticeable as possible. Step 15 is to be aware of FinCEN, the FATF, and other government agencies. FinCEN is the mechanism through which the government trawls through financial records and tries to catch as many unsuspecting victims as possible. FinCEN is a real danger. Its main purpose, as stated on its own website, is to work with its domestic and international partners to maximize the information sharing network and find new ways to create efficient measures to prevent and detect financial crime. FinCEN has teamed up with the Financial Action Task Force, a 26-nation organization created by the G7 countries to address the problems of money laundering. This is a global network of agencies who swap and share information on their citizens. There's no way to avoid the prying eyes of this particular network, but you need to know that it's there, and that many other governments worldwide are now divulging information about innocent transactions. Learn more about FinCEN and its associated organizations. Learn how they operate. Start by taking a look at their website. Keep informed of developments by reading material published in this area. To know the strategies of people who may be a threat to your security is to learn how to deal with them. If you practice in advance how to deal with any threat, you'll have an immediate advantage should the time come for you to implement what you practice. As with so many things, preparation is the key. And this brings me to step 16, which is one of the major steps that anyone wanting to increase their privacy should consider. And that is obtaining a second or alternative passport legally. My advice on this is always go through a recognized, officially appointed lawyer or distributor. Having a legitimate passport from another country gives you maximum opportunity to travel and have banking relationships outside your home country. And if you decide at any stage to expatriate altogether, you're almost certainly going to need one of these. Step 17 is that you should consider moving your funds offshore legally, and you should do it slowly, certainly, and with knowledge that the people you're dealing with are thoroughly trustworthy. There are many different ways of setting up structures that will protect your financial privacy. Some of them are excellent, some not so good. Don't rely on second-hand knowledge. Find out for yourself as much as you can. Step 18 is to never have all your eggs in one basket. Taking a multi-jurisdictional approach will help. Spread your risk by placing funds in several locations. And by that I mean different countries and continents, rather than different banks within one area. Protect yourself with as much privacy as you can. But I have nothing to hide, you say. Why do I need privacy? And the answer is that the mistake that most people make is they believe themselves to be innocent and therefore not worthy of attention. I can understand this. It's hard to really believe that we're living in what is effectively a police state. Most people would still rather believe that everything's okay, that the government and other powers that be are really acting on our behalf and have our good health at heart. Most of us are just too busy to notice what's really going on. We fall for the magic trick being played on us, letting our eyes follow the one hand on display, whilst the other hand deftly removes more and more of our liberties every day. We live in an age when there are too many factors contributing to our vulnerability. You just never know when you're being monitored in some way. So you should assume that you may be all the time. Not that you should be paranoid. There's a big difference between being paranoid and being careful. The world is not out there to get you, but some individuals or organizations may be. The most important lesson of all, perhaps, is that none of us should ever allow ourselves to become the victim. If we do that, we lose. If you think you're the victim, you will be. If we can quietly turn defense into attack by learning as many strategies to secure our privacy and freedom as we can, then there is real hope for lasting security.